Good evening, my fellow Americans. First, I should like to express my gratitude to the radio and television networks for the opportunities they have given me over the years to bring reports and messages to our nation. My special thanks go to them for the opportunity of addressing you this evening.
President Dwight D. Eisenhower on January 17, 1961, delivering his farewell address to the nation.
3 days from now, after half a century in the service of our country, I shall lay down the responsibilities of office as, in traditional and solemn ceremony, the authority of the presidency is vested in my successor. This evening, I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen.
Weekend Edition history commentator Douglas Brinkley looks back on that rarest of political oratory, a memorable presidential farewell address.
Even President Eisenhower hadn't given much thought to what his departing words to the nation would be until he received a telephone call from arms control advocate Norman Cousins. In a memo dated December 14, 1960, Eisenhower's longtime personal secretary, Ann Whitman, matter-of-factly noted, Norman Cousins called, his suggestions that you give a farewell address to the country, reviewing your administration, telling of your hopes for the future, a great sweeping document. Ike embraced the idea and immediately put a young political scientist turned speechwriter named Malcolm Moose to work. Since late October, U.S. Navy Captain Ralph E. Williams had brainstormed with Moose on what would be an appropriate 1961 State of the Union speech for the departing president to deliver. Eisenhower, they knew, had been stung by John F. Kennedy's criticism of the so-called missile gap during the 1960 campaign and the bomber gap in 1956, neither of which had the slightest basis in fact. A staunch Cold Warrior, albeit one who believed strongly in the need for arms control with the Soviet Union, Eisenhower was disgusted at the annex of a cabal of Air Force officers, aviation industry lobbyists, and congressmen promoting arms programs beneficial to their districts. When a warning about the dangers of the military-industrial complex idea showed up in an early draft of the speech, it found a very receptive taker in the president. Eisenhower spoke in his uninspiring, plain Kansas draw about the evils of communism.
We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method.
He pointed out the great irony of the Cold War. To maintain peace and bask in freedom, the United States had to maintain a gargantuan military establishment. Yet Eisenhower warned that the armaments industry and many politicians had never met a bomb they didn't like. Then, in unforgettable phrases, Eisenhower, the World War II hero who oversaw the D-Day invasion of Normandy, uttered the most quoted words of his entire public service career.
Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government.
Then the direct warning.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
The Boston Globe later noted that had anyone to Eisenhower's political left uttered such sentiments, the warning would have been dismissed as Leninist claptrap. The New York Times and Baltimore Sun downplayed the phrase industrial-military complex and the concept of disarmament with honor and treated it as a solid, old-fashioned, anti-communist speech. Over the years, however, Ike's farewell address, due to the anger over the Vietnam War, was adopted by the anti-war left as a prophetic clarion call from a tired old warhorse with a conscience. It is practically impossible, for example, to read a foreign policy book or article by Noam Chomsky, Eugene McCarthy, or another intellectual with a leftist leaning, and not encounter Eisenhower's dire warning of an armament industry run amok. Now, 40 years later, with the Cold War and Vietnam relegated to the past, we can appreciate Eisenhower's speech for what it was, a prescient warning that the only good nuclear weapon was a dismantled one. As a former five-star general who witnessed the unspeakable horror and tragic bloodbath of war firsthand, he wanted to de-glorify the macabre tendency of some industrialists to seek profit out of pain. Eisenhower wanted to leave office, able to say that lasting peace was in sight. He could not. But he did remind us that the binding force of mutual respect and love, not missiles, was what true freedom was all about.
Douglas Brinkley is director of the Eisenhower Center for American Studies at the University of New Orleans.
You and I, my fellow citizens, need to be strong in our faith that all nations under God will reach the goal of peace with justice. May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations, may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility.